COVID-19.
You can find Doc Griggs at DocGriggs1 on social media, and you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at DRDERY. You can follow us at Noise Filter on Instagram, Noise Filter NOLA on Twitter, and for more information about us and the show, you can go to noisefiltershow.com. Hey, Doc Griggs, any last words?
Remember, get checked, get fit, get moving. And remember to get some rest to boost your immune system. And Doc?
Protect yourself and others by staying home, and please wear masks when you go outside. Remember, health is a human right.
KBOO Portland. To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio. I am Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Ellie Gilland.
Thank you so much for joining us. Just quickly before we jump into the show, we'd like to give a special thanks and shout out to the Labor Radio Podcast Network for hosting podcasted versions of our show each month. So be sure to check that out at laborradionetwork.org. So we've discussed a lot on this show the stimulus payments paid out to workers, as well as, you know, the roles that essential workers have played in the pandemic over the last year. Today we're going to discuss something a little bit closer to home and talk about a proposal to pay essential workers here in the state of Oregon an extra stimulus payment for having worked through the pandemic. So essentially a recognition of the work that essential workers have done over the last year to hold our society and our state together.
Mm-hmm.
We're of course discussing here House Bill 3409, which would pay up to $2,000 to Oregonians who worked in certain frontline jobs from March 8th, 2020 to March 8th, 2021. So essentially just the year, the last year that's elapsed through the pandemic period. This would provide separate, this bill would also provide separate $1,200 checks, which would really be incentive payments to unemployed Oregonians, incentivizing them to go back and take frontline working jobs again.
Yeah, and we'll touch on it in a little bit, but I think that's there to kind of help combat some of the rhetoric that's going around about, you know, how unemployment payments are causing people to not want to go to work.
Exactly.
And so I think throwing that little incentive in there is a way to say, okay, you know, we want to support other people who have had challenges throughout the, you know, COVID-19 pandemic, and also say, you know, there are benefits to going back to work, you know, all of these types of things. And again, we've talked about it many times on the show, but I think it's also overblown the level to which that's a problem.
Of course.
You know, back, you know, at the start of the pandemic when we were talking about the $600 extra stuff, you know, this is not really a problem. Someone accidentally getting, not even accidentally, but someone getting an additional $600, like, this isn't kind of, you know, society crippling stuff.
Yeah, especially considering that it's like during a period in which if you didn't have that extra help, you may have, you know, as we saw a lot of our neighbors and
or you have a child who's all of a sudden at home and maybe you need to do something in addition to that to find extra ways to care for them so that you, you know, could do different things or so you can be job hunting or doing some of the other stuff we'll touch on, like trying to figure out you're paying rent.
Exactly.
Like all of the things,
and all the extra costs that kind of came with like buying more personal protective products or having to order more things, all that stuff. It really is a non-starter of an argument, but it has become a real touch point in our culture. But yeah, so just to sort of wrap this up, or to sort of get a little more context here, This bill that is being proposed would it would basically apply to jobs that either required you to work within 6 feet of people outside of your household, so essentially anyone that you don't live with, or if you work in a job that where your job is to clean up public facilities. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a broad swath of jobs, and I'll go through like which ones they are more specifically, but
and
essentially,
I believe it explicitly also calls out like you can't be a remote employee.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So this isn't going to apply to kind of office jobs or things of that nature. This is purely kind of what we deemed as essential.
Yeah. Work. Like even if your job was doing something essential, if you were doing it from home, this is not going to apply to you. This is just for folks who took on the extra burden of actually going out and keeping places open that were necessary for the functioning of society, mm-hmm. the continued functioning. And so, yeah, it applies to, there's basically 17 broad categories of jobs that this will apply to. And those are healthcare and public health workers, law enforcement, public safety, and other first responders, education workers, food and agricultural workers, energy workers, water and wastewater workers, transportation and logistics workers. So I assume that's truckers as well as like the public transit workers and things mm-hmm. like that. Public works and infrastructure support services, communications and information technology workers, other community-based or government-based operations and essential functions, which is, you know, kind of broad, but I imagine a lot of things can roll into that. Hazardous materials workers, financial services workers, which I imagine means like bank workers and not so much like day traders and things like that. Chemical workers, defense industrial base workers, which, you know, big question mark there, but commercial facilities and residential and shelter facilities, housing and real estate, as well as other related services in the housing industry, and then of course hygiene and hygiene products and services workers. So yeah, that does sort of cover a broad swath of workers within our state, and you know, this is something that not only is being supported by like workers in those industries, but also is being really promoted by the SEIU Local 503. Which happens to be the largest union representing Oregon State employees. So they're the ones that sort of have been pushing this and came up with this idea, and it has since been put forward or, you know, been adopted by state Democrats. And so, you know, a little breakdown of what the bill is asking to do or proposing to do. It's basically talking about using $450 million of the $2.6 billion in federal funds that was provided to the state of Oregon as part of the American Rescue Plan. And that, as you remember, happened back in March, right after the Biden administration took office. Mm-hmm. And so that money came to the state in the last few months.
Yeah. And it should be important to call out that in the ARP, basically the Biden administration earmarked and allows this money to be used this way. Mm-hmm. So it's not like this is some strange plan that a bunch of other states aren't doing or that doesn't make any sense. It was intended that an amount of money from the rescue plan was going to be used for this nature, and so it's really just we're deciding how much and when and to who.
Yeah, this is not a wild, you know, wild hair proposal. No. It's very much exact. Like the funds were basically intended to help states get their economies back up and running, and how best to do that than to provide.
Yeah, like we can't, the state of Oregon can't use this money for things not already approved in the rescue plan. So this is already in there as one of the possibilities. So again, it this is pretty standard. It's really just trying to get through the Oregon politics of it.
Yeah, and it really is, as we're going to go into, it is more of a political issue than like a common sense issue. Of course you provide this money. Like it was federal rescue plan money to mm-hmm. help workers and to, you know, restart the economy. Where else would you provide it than to people who need funds to continue putting back into the economy? And so, yeah, kind of a breakdown of what that would mean, you know, like where the actual funds would go. It's a $2,000 bonus for workers. It's up to $2,000 for workers whose base pay was less than the state's average wage in 2019, which was roughly $26.50 an hour, or $1,000 for workers earning more than the average but less than 150% of that average, which works out to around $39.70 an hour. And workers who make more than 150% of the state average would not receive this bonus,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, that does make sense. You know, this should be for folks who are working in these frontline jobs but are making, you know, not quite enough to get by. And so frontline workers who were unemployed during the pandemic but who were back in the job for at least 4 weeks by October 15th would receive that $1,200 kicker. So mm-hmm. that is, you know, essentially an incentive to get folks who left the jobs, the essential working jobs, back into that.
Or who were just unemployed.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, who couldn't find it. Yeah, or maybe they worked in a non-essential industry that closed down or stopped operating, or maybe they just weren't a part of some of the stimulus stuff for the small businesses in order to save jobs, right? Where, there was a lot of money that went towards paying salary. They weren't in that list. They couldn't find anything because it's not been easy. So.
Exactly. And my question with this, which I have not yet been able to find an answer to, but I hope will be clarified as this bill does move through the State House. But, obviously there's a section of the workforce that's applied here to, or the stimulus that is applied to transportation workers. And I'm curious if that includes, Uber drivers or DoorDash drivers, gig economy workers who have been doing a lot of the providing for people who are locked in their homes. They are not technically employees, they are contracted workers.
Yeah.
But they are people who do make very little comparatively to other people doing that work in other industries. And those people tend to have been doing a lot of work over the last year, taking a lot of the burden of providing for people. So I'm curious if this is if this $1,200 kicker would come to folks who then started working for Uber Eats or anything like that as an incentive to get them to do those jobs. That opens up a whole other can of worms that we have talked about on the show, but that it would be interesting to find
out. I would guess no, but but we'll see. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting question.
Yeah, I think you're probably exactly right that it does not apply to contracted workers, but it probably should. As I mentioned before, there are a lot of Democrats that do support this or have expressed support for this bill. Democrats, as we are in a supermajority state here in Oregon, Democrats control both chambers of the legislative body as well as the governorship in the state. So, if Democrats do support and there is enough support within the party, it is likely or at least possible that this could pass. But of course, it will face intense competition for funding as lawmakers also hash out budget priorities, because there is a very short window towards the end of this legislative session. And of course, a lot of a small amount of funds that need to be allocated in a lot of different ways, or at least have a lot of different combating priorities. So hopefully this is something that can get pushed through. One of the main supporters is local, if you're listening here in Portland, local representative Rob Nose, who represents Southeast Portland. He is one of the bill's co-sponsors, and he has said that he essentially sees it as, quote, a way to say thank you, and candidly, other reasons to do it to pass the bill are that a lot of essential workers have not gotten very rich making a living during this time, and that there of course is a chance that this will pass, but he doubts that it's going to be a check worth $2,000. He thinks that's a pretty big swing, and so essentially what that means is that even though Democrats do control both chambers of Congress and the governorship, there is staunch opposition from state Republicans. And so likely this will have to be negotiated back. So $2,000 is the big swing, is the big ask, and they'll probably reduce that during the negotiation process, during the debate on the House floor. As I said, state Republicans are staunchly opposed to this proposal, as they are to anything that, generally helps people, especially poorer people. They are prepared to oppose this. And one of the main reasons that the main arguments they're putting out there for why they do, in fact, oppose it is because it does nothing. It still leaves in place the $300 weekly unemployment bonus that has been provided to people who are receiving unemployment during this pandemic period. And, this is kind of a consistent, as Elliot was alluding to earlier, this is a pretty big cultural touchstone in our politics right now.
Yeah.
The discussion of you're paying workers to stay home, they're making as much money as they would on the job, so therefore, you're hurting, employment and things like that. I know we've discussed it a lot, but that is basically what the crux of their argument against this bill is going to be.
Yeah.
And so it's not surprising.
Yeah, and I think it's another one of those talking points that when you don't think about it, sounds like pretty reasonable, but when you dive into either the numbers or actually just start thinking about the topic, it doesn't quite add up.
Yes.
So I think one of the things that this argument really doesn't factor in is how difficult in a lot of states, Oregon is probably not as much like this, but in states like Florida and other states, how impossible it is to get on unemployment in the first place.
Right.
And how many really strict procedures and things and checkpoints and milestones that you have to meet along the way to get it. And so I think it really doesn't factor in that one, I think, you know, here on Labor Radio, like we really like to believe that people do enjoy work and like being part of a community, right? And these things are better than being unemployed and sitting at home. But in addition to that, there's a lot of work that goes into being on unemployment because you are constantly being hounded to get off of unemployment.
Yeah, exactly.
And so the thing is it's not this kind of boulevard of unbroken green lights that I think is that a statement like this paints it out to be. And I think that when you factor in a lot of those things and also just a lot of the data that I think you can get from census information and other studies that have been done is that people typically don't like to be on unemployment. They would much rather have a steady job that they enjoy, or maybe not even enjoy, that they are contributing to and understand that it's part of the societal contract that we're in. And so I think it's a silly argument, especially too, because it's been dropped from 600 to 300. And this is still a time of like craziness, right? People are, like we talked about, gig economy. Like there are still people who are ordering food probably, or haven't had a chance to get vaccinated, or other things that are going on. And so the $300 is kind of a way to say, like, the government is trying to help you and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, it strikes me that a lot of the people that make the argument against, or that you know, exactly the people you're describing who talk about how it disincentivizes employment and all those things. I mean, I imagine that most, if not any of them, have ever been on unemployment or ever gone through what it takes to, like, sign up for unemployment and then continue to receive that you know, month after week, month after month. It is a lot of work. It is a full-time job to do that.
I mean, a lot of people who are on unemployment are not living in, like, you know, a studio apartment,
right?
And are 23 and are kind of hanging out. Like, these are people who are in situations where they probably are in a multi-generational household, and they are contributing as, like, a member of that to probably multiple family members.
Yeah.
And then the stats just show that, right? Like, this is the actuality of what is going on, and these people aren't just kind of hanging around.
Exactly. And it reminds me a lot of the arguments against raising the minimum wage, where they just, you know, people, detractors from that, often cite or often talk about how, well, it's mostly, you know, minimum wage is intended for just like high school kids or, you know, people just breaking into, you know, their work, their careers, and it's not really supposed to be a living wage. And then the numbers, of course, do not bear that out at all. The average people working for, you know, the minimum wage
is much older.
Exactly. I mean, older, with children and, you know, families to feed and things like that. And so, you know, this just, of course, this is a constant thread throughout our Labor Radio shows, is that there are just consistent tropes that people who tend to be on the conservative side of the argument pull out and continue to roll out time and again against any type of progress, any type of reform or change or, you know, new proposal that would help working people, you know, ameliorate any bit of pain.
And I think that's part of the reason why the, you know, if you get a job for 4 weeks by October 15th, you know, you get the extra kind of little $1,200 bonus. I think that's why that's in there. I mean, we could go kind of back and forth on this. Like, in the grand scheme of things, if you want to talk about, like, medium, like, rent, $2,000 is just not even enough to give people. So, I mean, we're at the end of the day, we're arguing over, like, scraps. And so it's, I mean, the whole thing is somewhat upsetting, just because I think that this is, you know, I agree with the co-sponsor, right? Like, this is a really nice way to say you guys put up with a lot.
Yeah.
And you got us through a really tough period with not a lot of assistance. And again, it's not enough money, in my opinion, at all.
No.
But again, it's earmarked in the ARP to do things like this.
Exactly.
So.
And it's honestly like, it's kind of the least that could possibly be done, considering that, you know, over the course of the last year plus on this show and just in our world, we've discussed the fact that there's been three stimulus payments, like one-time payments, that have gotten progressively smaller over that time. And yet, you know, bills have still been due. You know, people have still had to pay for things like food and shelter and housing, all, you know, clothing and all those things. And so it's like, this is such a slap in the face to argue over the minute details of this, whether or not there's going to be an extra $300 that someone might receive for 1 month after they get this one-time payment, versus looking at, you know, a thing that just is often under-discussed in these arguments about the fact that during the same exact period, those who control the companies these people work for, you know, particularly people like Jeff Bezos, I mean, he is just a very shining example of this, have just doubled, if not just tripled or quadrupled their wealth during this time. And so it's, you know, are we really fighting over the table scraps of it when, you know, these meager, you know, handouts,
yeah.
Really, we should be figuring out how to pay these workers as much as possible and redistribute some wealth, you know, or at least tax it at a reasonable rate. We're just going to take a break here quickly and reintroduce the show. If you're just joining us, this is Labor Radio, and we have been discussing, we'll continue to be discussing, a proposal in the Oregon State House to basically provide one-time essential worker payments to people who have done essential work during the last year in the pandemic period.
As a part of the American Rescue Plan.
Exactly, yes. So it is not just money coming out of nowhere. It's money that was provided from the federal government to the state of Oregon and to all states in the country to do basically exactly this, to restart the economy, to help workers get back into jobs, or to
prep schools, all that kind of, and which we've talked about on another episode, which, you know, if you want to go to laborradionetwork.org, you can see podcasted versions of this show, and we talk very much in depth about the American Rescue Plan.
That is a solid tie-in, and you were exactly right. Radionetwork.org. And, you know, something that you just, to bring it back to what we were talking about, like, something that you did mention before, that, like, the $300 a week that people who are on unemployment during this period that they've been receiving, you know, that is it pales in comparison to what the average rent is in most cities, and if we're talking about Oregon here and in the city of Portland. And, you know, on top of that, we're, you know, up against the deadline. The moratorium on evictions is about to, you know, be up. The moratorium that was put in place at the beginning of the pandemic, despite the fact that COVID cases are still, you know, elevated from the point at which the pandemic started, we are now about to see an expiration of that moratorium at the end of the month on June 30th.
Yes.
And so if there was ever a reason to not get rid of that bonus in unemployment, or if there was ever a reason to support a proposal like this that would provide one-time help payments to people who are working in lower-wage jobs, I think that would be a prime example of why it's needed right now. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, as you know, as you may or may not have been aware, there has been a moratorium on folks, landlords evicting tenants over the last year.
Yeah, so again, so basically the way it's going to work is that if, you know, obviously if you were a tenant who was not paying rent, you will now be required to pay rent in July.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, if people remember, that rent money was not just being forgiven. It was being counted against you. And in February 2022, you're going to be expected to pay it back. And so basically what's happening is this was kind of a way to give people additional time so that on July 1st, there wasn't just going to be a drop in the bucket of everybody having to pay all of the back rent that they have due. And so things are not going to go well with this.
To say the least.
Yeah, and we're starting to see a ton of that. So I will say there is a bill in the state Senate, Bill 278, which would protect tenants from eviction for an additional 60 days, provided that they've shown proof that they've applied for rental assistance. And so the reason for that is that I think across the United States, not just in Oregon, but people as they're reapplying for rental assistance, as they're being going to have to pay again in July, many people aren't ready to pay or haven't recovered or haven't gotten another job. And so there's going to be a huge rush on the system, right? And, you know, I think there's $200 million something that the housing department has to kind of help with rental assistance. Mm-hmm. But actually being one of those people who can get at that $200 million is going to be really difficult.
Right.
And so I think we're going to see a huge kind of uptick in evictions because this I don't think people are prepared for this. I do have a census poll from May 2021 that shows that at least 5% of Oregon renters were confident that they couldn't pay June rent, which doesn't sound like a lot, but that's of all renters across the entire state.
Yes.
And when I dive into that, in that same census, 27% of tenants said that they were behind rent payments in May. So I think that's basically people admitting that they can probably pay it, but they're basically skirting on this very thin line.
Yeah.
27% of all tenants were behind on rent payments in May. And so what that means is that not only are people not working towards that back rent that's going to be due in February of 2022, but they're also very unprepared to even pay July rent. And so I think this basically this is all coming, you know, this is kind of coming together in a really dangerous thing that's going to cause a lot of evictions.
That's nuts.
The other part of this is that you know, over 90% of tenant landlord lawsuits, the person who's playing the tenant role typically can't afford real legal assistance.
Right.
And so what people can probably imagine I'm working up to here is that in July and in these times, there's going to be a really big major run on kind of like state provided and aided kind of services for legal advice. And so the Oregon Bar in particular is preparing a webinar on June 24th, which I really recommend if you're in a situation like this that you go check out the webinar, because this is a really, really useful tool for you to understand your rights and kind of what's going on. And in most cases, if you're not ready to pay, even that 60-day Senate bill that I mentioned, the Bill 278, there's probably really not enough time for it to get through whatever it needs to get through and actually get passed, right? So people are really not going to get protected, and it's going to be really important to understand what's available to you and what you can do. And so I would really recommend Googling the Oregon State Bar and other things like this, because it's going to be really important. But I think the key here is to really start talking more about the plight of people who aren't going to be paying rent. Yeah. And now that, you know, your kid is probably maybe in school or maybe not fully in school, your housing is kind of more important than it's ever been. And, you know, whether it's the Portland Mercury or it's Willamette Week or whatever kind of publication, you know, you're seeing story upon story of people saying, I can't go back out on the streets. That's not a life I want to live. I have a child now. This is not something that's tenable. And I think every Portlander, at least, and probably across the state, we've seen the homeless kind of situation start to spiral out of control, and Oregon having really not the best housing for them as well. I don't think the infrastructure can handle a rash of kind of new people out on the streets, especially those of which who really didn't do anything to deserve it. Not that the people there currently did, but I mean, this is just a sheer, the housing crisis here, it's coming to a head.
It really is. I mean, I think, yeah, exactly like you said, like there is just not enough, there's already not enough services or ability to handle the explosion in the houseless population that has existed over the last year. And even prior to that, we were not, as a state or as a city, capable of really providing all the services needed to help people living on the streets. And if we are about to see, as I think we certainly are, based on what you just explained, like an explosion in the amount of people who are being evicted from their homes and being forced to seek shelter, you know, through public services or just live on the street, I mean, I think we are about to experience a crisis that we are not prepared for, and frankly, maybe have not even thought enough about how to deal with. And I, you know, I'll editorialize a little bit, but I don't think that our current city government, headed by Mayor Wheeler, is particularly prepared to deal with this, or even ready to admit this is a coming looming disaster for him. And yeah, it's a pretty sad state of affairs that, as we were talking about, like, we're arguing over, you know, not we, but, you know, Republicans and Democrats are arguing over whether or not we should provide one-time $2,000 payments to people who have been who've already been forced to work through a global pandemic, through a viral disaster, and do jobs where they have had to work within 6 feet of other people throughout all this time, working for low wages in bad environments, oftentimes in jobs where they don't get any respect. You know, so those people, we're talking about whether or not those people deserve a little bit of extra money. But as Elliot mentioned before, the eviction moratorium and the rent moratorium are not things where it's just wiped out. Like, that's a payment that has to come
basically
back.
We were avoiding the ramifications of all the problems that you're talking about with basically pushing all this stuff out, and essentially that date is coming.
Yes.
And so, you know, the bill in the state Senate is one thing, but really I think this is going to cause some big problems. And again, I just kind of wanted to pull it up. It's osbar.org for that state bar webinar, and it's on June 24th at 12 p.m. Pacific. So if you are interested, head over to the Oregon State Bar website.
Yeah, that's really good information. Again, that's for folks who will need legal assistance for dealing with
I think they're just going to provide general information. I mean, obviously every case is going to be really hard. It's hard for, you know, a lawyer to give sweeping recommendations, but there's just going to be more information and different things available. If you suspect that you're not going to be able to pay in July and there are going to be problems and you're going to end up in court, I think it's probably a good resource.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that is great that they're providing that for folks who need it. But yeah, again, you know, just to sort of wrap everything up here, it does seem like this is something that if you support, you know, going back to the stimulus payments, if you support people who have been working in these essential jobs, or if you yourself have been, like, you should contact your state representative mm-hmm. right now, or, you know, whenever you can within the next, you know, week or so, and let them know that you voice your support for this bill.
Yeah.
And make sure, you know, it's House Bill 3409, and that would basically provide meager, small assistance to yes. folks who have been working to keep our society from falling apart during this time.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a lot more that can be said on this, and I'm sure we will be discussing this as that moves through the state house. But again, just, you know, if you do support that, if you're someone who could potentially benefit from that, contact your state representative and let them know that you want this passed and this is a priority for you. We are, of course, out of time here. We will pick it back up next month in July, on the third Monday of July. But thank you so much for tuning in to Labor Radio. Again, I have been Michael Cathcart.
And I'm Elliot Gilland.
And until next time, have a great day.
Hi, I'm David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because there are 100 other David Browers in the United States, and that keeps me separate from most of them. I like the direction you're going in, KBOO, Portland, and I wish you had a lot more company.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.